Well, there are times in life when a second is a first, and today is one of them. This is the second time that today's guest has been on the show, but it's the first time we've had a return guest. He's back for a couple of reasons. Number one is that his previous appearance was so thought-provoking and interesting to our viewers that it has been far and away our most watched episode. And secondly, perhaps a more important reason is that a great deal has happened since the last time that our guest, Mr. Ken Drysdale, was on with us in terms of a very, very important endeavor that he's involved in that he's going to talk about. He talked about it on the last episode, but he's back to give us an update, some very interesting things that have been happening with COVID-19 and his efforts to bring the people, the individuals who were the purveyors of this evil to justice, to proper justice. And by way of an introduction, I noticed today something quite remarkable. For the first time ever, on the forms that Hockey Canada distributes for parents to fill out when registering their children for hockey, there is a brand new set of entries. And these will be very interesting to, I hope, to our guest. There's a box that you're to check to confirm whether there is a family history of unexpected death during physical activity. And next, there's a box that says, is there a family history of unexplained death of a young person? This is on a Hockey Canada registration form, if you can imagine. These are kids in the dewish days of youth. We're talking about them dropping dead from playing hockey. Well, there's a good reason for why the government is, and obviously Hockey Canada, which is controlled by the Canadian government, the federal government, they're well aware of the problem, and they know why that's on their form. That's because children have been exposed to and been injected with an experimental drug that causes grievous bodily harm and death. So before we get to reintroducing our guest and letting him tell us all about the exciting updates that have been going on with him, we have to go to our quotations board. And I know Ken loved these last time. I hope he likes these as much. The first one is from a very famous German philosopher, often quoted and misquoted, actually, Friedrich Nietzsche, who once wrote, this was in German, by the way, this is a translation. I was in darkness, but I took three steps and found myself in paradise. The first step was a good thought, the second a good word, and the third a good deed. The next is from a man who is widely considered to be the best of all American presidents. Certainly, he's routinely considered in their top two or three, Abraham Lincoln, who once wrote that our reliance is in the love of liberty, which God has planted in us. Our defense is in the spirit which prizes liberty as the heritage of all men and women in all lands everywhere. Destroy this spirit and you have planted the seeds of despotism at your own doors. Familiarize yourself with the chains of bondage and you prepare your own limbs to wear them. And finally, from a lesser known human, but someone who might be known to our guest, H.L. Mencken, a 20th century libertarian economist philosopher, who once wrote, the urge to save humanity is almost always only a false face for the urge to rule it. All right, so who do we have in the program? Mr. Ken Drysdale. Ken has a very extensive biography. I'm not going to go into all the detail of it because I almost exhausted myself the last time I did it when I was here in June. Suffice to say, he is an engineer. He's been a very successful engineer and inventor, has patented some very fascinating inventions over the years. And he's been very successful in business, lives in Manitoba now. And more importantly, he has become very, very active, and really you might even say a pioneer in the active fight against COVID-19 lockdowns, COVID-19 restrictions, and did this at great personal risk, great personal cost, and exercising great, if I may say so, great personal courage, and an interest in his fellow men, his fellow women, in his community, and in their freedom, and in their liberty, and in their safety. And the essence of what he's been involved in, that he has written a report, a detailed, copiously documented report on the truth about COVID-19, actually. Not the stuff that the governments were telling us, not models, not case counts, not PCR testing, but the actual truth about COVID-19 and the risks thereof. And what it amounts to is it's a whole pack of lies and rubbish. And Ken's report reveals this. It's never been, to my knowledge, no one's ever written anything contrary to it, to controvert or discredit it. It stands alone in the public discourse, really as an authoritative, at least in Canada, as an authoritative critique and condemnation of COVID-19 lockdown measures. And more than that, it's a call to action. And the action is to hold accountable the individuals who are responsible for conceiving of and purveying vaccines and lockdown mandates, and more than that, for causing incredible harm and death to Canadians who suffered under government overreach from COVID-19. And so Ken is back to talk to us about what's been happening with Citizens for Truth, because of course, the work is not done. The report is just the beginning. And there's much more work to be done. And so Ken is back. Welcome, Ken. Thanks for coming back. See us again on Grey Matter. It's a pleasure to have you on the program again.
Well, it's interesting to be both a second and a first at the same time.
You get the gold and silver medal. How's that?
You know, I just have to correct one thing, because okay. I'm under such scrutiny, as you well know. Okay. I actually didn't patent those inventions. I just made money on them because I figured patenting wasn't worth my while. And we've talked about that before.
You did say that, and I sit corrected.
Sorry about that.
I didn't get the inventor part right.
Yes.
All right, that's good. I didn't totally screw up your introduction. So, Ken, just to kind of launch into our discussion, it's just announced, I believe, or the big rumor you've been hearing is that as of September 30th, people are no longer going to have to produce proof of COVID-19 vaccination in order to enter this country. Have you heard about this?
I thought that happened today.
Okay. But I wasn't sure if it was confirmed.
Yeah, I haven't confirmed that myself. I actually was out in a welding shop all day today and yesterday, so I'm 2 days stale on the news.
Well, the real question I want to know from you, though, is there any connection between this and the Prime Minister's awful impersonation of Freddie Mercury?
You know, I want to be able to say that nothing surprises me with that fellow, but being over at the Queen's funeral, representing Canada, getting drunk in a bar, and singing Bohemian Rhapsody, that surprised me a little bit. I guess I'm naive as to the depths this person will go to, I suppose.
Well, you know what I was thinking to myself is, you know, as he's trying to sing that song, and of course, you know, trying to sing like Freddie Mercury is a big job. But I was thinking to myself, my goodness, can't you do anything well?
Well, if he did, he wouldn't need the press, would he?
Probably wouldn't be the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
So let's get an update from you about some of the things that have been happening with the report and Citizens for Truth. I've been following your emails and your website, and a lot of exciting activity. Can you give us kind of an update about how things are going?
Well, you know, I would have never guessed as to how this was going to go. When we spoke last time, we were just in the process of putting up a website. So our website's been alive, I think, the first week of June or second week of June. And as of right now, I'm just looking at the screen. We've had 107,270 unique visitors to it. 107,000 in 3 months or whatever that is. The report, we estimate, has been downloaded and copied 250,000 times. Wow. And my wife and I were just talking about that earlier this morning. I said, I should have put it on Amazon and charged a nickel a piece. I would have been on the best sellers.
So you didn't?
No, I did not.
You don't copyright your book.
Well, you know, believe it or not, it's not my information. All I did was round it up and lasso it and put it in a corral, you know.
You need a lawyer, Ken.
Oh, yeah, believe me. With some of the other things that are going on. One of the things we went over the report in some detail last time. And just to remind the viewers, all I did was I took the government's own words, Statistics Canada statistics, as they were presented for 2020 mortality rates, and asked, what do they tell us? And that was really the theme of the report. There was no expert opinion in it. It was just the government said that if you were 70 years old and older, that getting COVID was a death sentence. So what were the statistics? And the statistics were that in 2019, before the COVID epidemic, that you had a 10 times greater chance of dying for whatever reason at all than you did of getting COVID and dying in 2020, which was the heaviest death year. Now, since that time, we have not been able to update the statistics from Statistics Canada to reflect 2021 because Statistics Canada hasn't issued those numbers yet. Now, somebody might say to me, it's September, Ken. Yeah, you're right. We're 3/4 of the way through the following year, probably the most important statistics of their entire careers, and they haven't issued it yet. They issued an interim report, and I did a post on that, and what we found there was incredible. And I can direct your readers to our blog posts. There's a picture of a guy with a buckling up a seatbelt, and the headline is Buckle Up, Interim Numbers from Statistics Canada. So one thing, so we went through the report in detail last time, but one of the things I asked your viewers was, or told your viewers was, this report wasn't intended to sit on a university shelf somewhere or in a drawer in an office. It was intended for citizens and police. It was intended for MPs and MLAs and school board officials and principals. It was intended that ordinary folks like you and I could pick this thing up, they could read it, they could copy it, they could send it on, they could deliver it to their doctor, they could deliver it to their MP. And as I was saying a little earlier, about 250,000 Canadians have done that since June, when we got on this.
Incredible.
Every single MP, every MLA, every senator, every police force, to my knowledge, in Canada has received a copy of this. And more interesting than not, it's our national police force, the RCMP, that say, we don't know anything about this. It's incredible. Just absolutely incredible. We held an event on September 3rd in Winnipeg. Now, September 3rd.
Right.
It was a Labor Day long weekend, and we had 1,000 people there. For those folks who don't live in Winnipeg, you don't know how incredible it is to get 1,000 people in Winnipeg on Labor Day weekend to be out. They're usually at the lake doing whatever you do at the lake, but 1,000 people showed up. It was an entirely peaceful event. We had two speeches by police officers. I gave a speech. Weeks before the event, we sent a registered letter to the commissioner in Manitoba. I believe the fellow's name's Colodi or something like that. And we invited them to speak. And we told them that what we were going to do, what we were expecting from them, what they could expect from us. We sent that by registered mail. We told them we would hold an agenda spot in the speeches for them following my speech. And we also guaranteed their safety. And we sent a similar letter to the Winnipeg police on the same time, registered to the police chief, and we asked for City of Winnipeg police protection, because sometimes you get infiltrators, and we wanted to prove to the RCMP that we were doing everything we could to protect their safety. Of course, they're the guys with the guns, and we're not. So we arrived early at the RCMP headquarters in Winnipeg. We received no response from the RCMP, no phone call, no email, no little wave in the window when they passed me by on the highway, nothing. And so we got there a little early, and my wife walked into the headquarters. It was unlocked, and she went up to an officer and spoke to him, had a nice conversation. When she left, they locked the doors. They were afraid of their safety. If you've watched the video, you probably noticed that the average age of the attendees was probably 60, 65. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of small children there, little babies there. They had RCMP on guard outside the building in squad cars and hiding up trees and underneath manhole covers and stuff, filming us. And we had nice conversations with the two officers in the cars. They were very, very nice men, very polite, very, very professional. In any case, we had an event. It went off right on time. Maybe that's no surprise when an engineer was involved with it. We opened with very respectful prayers. I gave a speech. We then stopped and waited for the RCMP spokesman to show up and give his speech or her speech. And of course, they never showed up. So we went on, and we had one retired Winnipeg police officer give a speech. We had one Winnipeg police officer who was fired because he wouldn't take the jab. We had a fired 9/11 operator. She was fired because she wouldn't take the jab. We had a local celebrity, Shadow Davis, come and give us a speech. We closed with a prayer. And then the big event here was that out of those 1,000 people, my guess is about 300 to 400 of them lined up almost in silence, holding their copies of the report. And I stood at the locked doors of the RCMP station, and each person walked up. They put the report down at the doors, and if they wanted to, they hugged me and shook my hand. I think I had chapped lips or chapped cheeks and a sore hand at the end of the day. I believe I shook about 300, 400, 500 people's hands that day. At the end of it, there was I think it was 5 or 6 piles of reports, about 2 feet high each, sitting in front of the police station. They were wrapped in a Canadian flag, and somebody brought flowers. There were small children who had drawn and colored pictures of police officers holding children's hands, and with the question, "Why are you not protecting us?" So we ended it. There was no incidents of violence or anything at all, for goodness sake. I think I heard one person swearing in the crowd once. And then that was quickly stopped, shall I say. So it was an entirely peaceful event, very successful. We had tried to follow up with the RCMP. They have never contacted me. I know they're watching my posts and listening to my phone calls. One of the retired police officers that we work with, who represents Police for Freedom in Manitoba, he has a contact at the RCMP, and it took about a week to get that contact to answer the phone, because you see, the RCMP don't answer their phones. And finally, that RCMP officer told him that the commissioner, I believe, it wasn't the main commissioner, but I think it was Major Crimes Unit Commissioner, stated, "There will be no investigation." Mm-hmm. And when our retired police officer asked, "Well, what did you do with the reports?" "We kept one copy and shredded the rest." So that kind of brings us to some of the other things that people across the country have done. I was hesitant. I didn't want to say that we have done, but there's groups, independent groups all over the country that have taken up the cause with this report. And that's what we were hoping for. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we've had some significant successes. Interestingly enough, to my knowledge, and I stand to be corrected because I get hundreds of emails a day, RCMP have been a brick wall. They don't want to talk to us. They don't want to answer our phone calls. They don't want to talk to citizens about this. And that's, I have to make sure that I'm clear here. That's not the men and women sitting in the cars, because I've spoken to them and they're bewildered and they're wondering, where does this go? What are we going to do next? You know, I mean, when you have some big scary guy who yells at one of the leadership in this country, doesn't threaten, but yells, and she's got five people with her and steps into an elevator with a smile on her face. The RCMP within the minute are doing a criminal investigation on this poor guy. And yet when 1,000 people show up in Winnipeg with 300 or 400 copies of the report, and we've told them ahead of time, and we've been very polite and we've been very professional, you know, there's going to be no investigation. Sorry. So if anyone has any question as to whether or not the police are working for you or working for Ottawa.
Well, you know, Ken, you left out the most important piece of information, though. I mean, on September 3rd, obviously, you hosted a super spreader event. Did you not follow up to see how many of the people who were there died from COVID?
Well, certainly, I think that might be right. But COVID it must be a new rendition of COVID, because it only affects your brain. Because obviously, Mr. Trudeau must have had that when he went to London and made fools of Canada at that bar that night. So,
well, he's had COVID more often than anybody else I can think of. He seems to get COVID every time that he does something silly and gets himself in trouble. But looking at the report, it's entitled now "Investigation into Criminal Allegations Concerning COVID-19 Pandemic Response." And I didn't see this cover page this beautiful cover page now that shows up on your website with this young lady holding a baby with a mask on. It's a very, very compelling cover. Is that something that's new that you guys have just come up with, or is that cover actually on the report?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very compelling cover. When people want to get their hands on this report, can they still do that by visiting your website?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, when we were, just to let you know, when we were on your show the first time, we didn't have the website, and I had set up a temporary Google Doc address. And believe it or not, every day I still get 3 or 4 or 5 people asking through that original temporary site. And it's because of your show. So it's always the same email. It's, I just saw you on Leighton Gray's show, and could I get, but now it's on our website.
I'm glad that we did our part. We want to show a little video clip here, Ken, of some of these wonderful people who are going out to police detachments throughout the country. And who are pressing this point and who are calling for justice. We've got one. I believe this one was in Brampton. Is that right?
Brantford.
Thank you. Ontario. Oh, I should know. That's where Wayne Gretzky's hometown, right? I believe so.
The day he knows my hometown, I'll know his.
Oh, fair enough. Devin, would you mind just showing that clip?
So we are at the OPP near Paris in Brantford today. And we are going to try again to deliver the papers that we unsuccessfully delivered last time. The ones asking the police to investigate the politicians and the health officials who mandated these illegal mandates over the last 2 years. It appears, this is allegedly that there's been collusion between the media and government to suppress information from the Canadian people, which has ultimately led to a tremendous lack of informed consent.
So you have reported this?
Yes. So guys, we've broken out into conversation with the two police officers who met with us, and it's awesome. They were so receptive and so respectful, and I'm very confident that they are actually going to go ahead with this today.
You know, Ken, you're going to have to think of some really cool name for these wonderful people who are going out. You know, there used to be Arnold Palmer used to have Arnie's Army. so you're going to have to go, this is Drysdale's Dragoons. You have to figure out some really cool name for these wonderful people who are going out and holding the police to task. And you know, God willing, at some point, you have to think that there's going to be a breakthrough and a police force is finally going to take this up and do a proper investigation. That's the goal, isn't it?
Yes. And I think, by the way, there's no better name than Canadian Patriots for these folks.
Yeah.
Because what your viewers just saw was the culmination of a lot of hard work, not just in getting the group together, but this started with this group going to the regional police force in Brantford, Ontario. And when they got there, the police wouldn't open the door because, and now did you see the group? There's about half a dozen people. The Brantford Municipal Police were afraid for their safety, so they wouldn't open the doors. So they tried again. This time they got a hold of the liaison officer for Brantford Municipal Police, and they went back. And then the first success they had was that they met with Constable Fenton, and he did take up the report, and he said they would do an investigation. And to quote him, he said, this is unlike any investigation they've ever undertaken. And then he suggested, or I believe it was the police chief, the municipal police chief suggested that they go to the OPP and they would do an introduction for them. Mm-hmm. So the Brantford Municipal Police arranged the meeting with the OPP, and the officer that you saw there was actually from headquarters and was visiting that station and had, and so when they came out, that was, it started in Brantford where the investigation was supposedly going to take place. Now we have a claim or a case file number. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the OPP and they took it up as well. Now, even that's been spotty because their neighbors in Orangeville, Ontario, went to the OPP. And the OPP said, you'll have to take it to the fraud division. Get out of here. You know. So what I've done is I've hooked up these two groups, the one from Orangeville and the one from Brantford, and they're going to repeat the success. They're going to use the same strategy in Orangeville. So it's starting to build up speed there. But the RCMP has been an interesting nut to crack here. You know, our national police force won't investigate allegations of probably the largest crime in all of our country's history.
Mm-hmm.
But we are hitting that. We're still going after that. People right across the country are delivering the report to the RCMP. Sometimes they're being locked out. Sometimes they're opening the door. Sometimes the RCMP are going, I won't take it, which is interesting because to me that means that there has been an order from up high, because I know that the rank and file, or a lot of the rank and file, agree with what we've written, and mm-hmm. that they're worried about their families, their communities. Mm-hmm. And so they seem to all be following orders, as Sergeant Schultz used to say, for some of the older people in your viewing audience. Mm-hmm. You know, and the RCMP, unfortunately, have really been taking it on the chin. And that's nothing that I take pleasure in, believe me. I mean, when you have Brenda Luckey in front of a Commons committee talking about gun law, and she admits she doesn't know gun law, and she doesn't know what a PAL is. When you have Commons committees questioning the government about the Emergencies Act, and the RCMP say they never asked for it, and neither did Ottawa police. When you see the debacle that happened on the East Coast with the horrible murders that took place and how that was politicized, and again, I want to emphasize to your viewers that is not the rank and file RCMP. That is not the rank and file who I phone when I'm got a problem or I'm in trouble. You know, they're the ones that run towards trouble. They don't run away from it. But as an organization, the RCMP, if they're not running away from it, they're certainly playing the see no evil, hear no evil thing. And that has got to be disheartening, and that's got to be heartbreaking to those folks who are every day going out there to protect us.
Well, it's heartbreaking to me too, because let's face it, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police are a symbol. They're an archetype for Canada. They have a world wide reputation as a police force, as a protector of the right. And here it's being revealed in living color that they, just like every other institution that the liberals are involved with or have the ability to control through their tentacles and their network, whether it's the media or universities or school boards or national police forces, wherever the liberals are involved, there's rot and corruption. And that's really what we're seeing. That's the face of the RCMP now, sadly, at least the public face of it. And, you're so right to draw the distinction between the rank and file people, who work on the front lines of policing. It's not them. They're not the ones making these decisions. And I would say the same thing, for example, in my hometown of Cold Lake, or, the military people who until very recently had to wear masks all the time, everywhere they went. They didn't want to wear those. They don't want to, require other people to wear masks, but they're under the thumb of this really dictatorial government, aren't they?
Yeah. And it's like you said, it's in everything. Just this morning, true story, I got a phone call from a dear, dear friend of mine. He's retired now, but he used to own significant companies across Canada, at least to me, significant. And they had a visit about a year or two ago from the, I can't even remember what they're called, but they're the Combines Commission in Canada. So that's the group of I bet most people didn't even know there was one of these. But there's a commission or a department of the government which investigates if any company appears to have gotten a stranglehold, if you will, on business in a certain sector. So, for instance, let's say I went into a town and bought every restaurant, in town, and maybe that's a silly thing, but I've monopolized that business, so they'll step in and take action. So this Combines Commission, or whatever they're really called, Monopoly Commission, has investigated them. They're making them sell some assets in a certain rural city in Western Canada. And he's bewildered. They spent $1 million in trying to fight this thing. And I said to him, I was throwing gasoline on the fire this morning. I said to him, what about Bell Media? What about Thompson Newspapers? What about Rogers? What about everything in Canada is a monopoly? And I don't know how many media companies are on Canada, 2 or 3. They own everything. All the newspapers are owned by Thompson, I believe. Somebody can correct me on that in the comments, I'm sure. But everything is a monopoly in this country. And to me, that's the root of it. It's kind of a system of fascism. Everybody knows what communism is. There seems to be a secret around what fascism is. Communism is when the government owns everything and they put everybody together and they make you all farmers now and you're all bootmakers. But fascism is different. Fascism is where the government colludes with industry and together they own everything. And they dictate everything. And that's really what we've got now in this country. So what we're seeing with COVID, in my mind, is a part of that collusion between industry and regulatory bodies. And, when you see somebody, for instance, not to necessarily pick on her, but it's an easy pick, Brenda Luckey, who's a head police officer in the RCMP. Holy smokes! I invite every one of your viewers to find her resume online and read it. What in the heck does she know about policing? it's amazing. And again, not to pick on Brenda, but you have a prime minister who never held a full-time job in his life, who's canceling your gas-powered cars when his trust fund came from gas stations that his grandfather ran in Quebec. That's what it's all about. It's all about collusion and monopolistic practices. But don't you do it.
No, yeah. Well, how about a minister of transport who says that you can't get on a plane or train or a ship who's functionally illiterate in both official languages. Minister, I call him abracadabra because only sorcery could install such a man in such an important position. But the diversity, inclusion, equity is a topic for another day. We've got a show on that. I call it time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting to me, too, because if you actually check how many of the cabinet ministers were in attendance at Trudeau's wedding, that tells you a lot. You know, the deputy prime minister is a, she was a, was it an entertainment reporter? But she was a reporter. Well, at least Don Lemon's not in charge here in Canada.
No. But, you know, coming back to this idea of COVID and the collusion between government and corporations, this is something that since the last time we talked is becoming more and more clear, isn't it? As we sort of get the lockdowns, knock on wood, in the rear view. And as more and more, you know, literature and case studies and retrospectives come out, we're beginning to see these connections more and more clearly. And the 5,000-foot view about what COVID meant and why it unfolded the way it did is becoming more and more clear. And to quote Dr. Jordan Peterson, we haven't yet seen the worst of this Liberal government. So this is why it's so important, Ken, that that we keep going. We at this point we cannot be complacent. We can't just say, "Oh well, wow, that's nice. No more lockdowns." There's a lot more work to do, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And again, this is not work for experts and not that person in Ottawa. It's the work for each and every Canadian. Look at what these ladies and gentlemen did in Brantford. You know, they cracked that nut, and that was because there was persistence. They knew they had to do it. They looked around. There was no one else to do it. And so they've now got an official app for municipal police. There's other people across the country that are doing this as well, but this gets done by ordinary folks turning off the TV and going out and doing something. All you got to do, folks, you download the report from our site. It's free. We've done the heavy lifting for you. Download it. Walk down to the school board and drop it off. Go down to the police station with a couple of friends. It's terrible that I have to say that, isn't it? It's terrible that I have to say that. It's like, you know, that this really bothers me. My wife's people fled after the war. And, you know, talking to her parents that lived through that, and this might sound overly dramatic, but it's really not, folks. It's really not. They're monitoring you every day. More information comes out of how the government has been illegally monitoring. There's more information come out on the CAN app, or Arrive at CAN app, just in the last few days, that they were monitoring even more information on you. You know, they're monitoring your spending. So it's not... The comparison is not that dramatic in real life. This is more dangerous because when it was done 75 years ago, it from the beginning, it really wasn't sustainable. But they're making fundamental changes. They've been doing it over the last several generations in our country. Where a lot of young people now, when you tell them so-and-so's happened, they go, "So, what's the matter with that?" You know, Leighton, when you were growing up, were you at risk of being canceled because you might question something the governments did or said or are doing around the world?
Well, there used to be a bumper sticker. You probably remember this one that said, "Question everything."
Yeah. And now you can't because you're accused of being this, that. They'll bring charges against you, even though they're unfounded charges. And they know that sometimes that's all they need to do to make somebody shut up. But, you know, the protection for each individual Canadian isn't through guys like Leighton or like me or like Preston Manning or whoever else is on the stage right now. It's by getting together, each and every one of you, by millions of Canadians getting together, standing up. That's the protection. You know, they're not going to come after a million Canadians. They won't be able to win. The jig is up at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've woken up at least a quarter of a million people. You know, I got to tell you, I had what happened yesterday. And even though we've had so million, quarter of a million or millions of people who are now listening, every time I have one that happens, you know, I met with somebody yesterday, really great person and professional. And after we talked and I told him some of the things we were doing, and he's had possession of the report for months. And he phoned me later that afternoon. He said, you know, I read your report and I agree with every single word in it. I went, I don't know. It never ceases to, I never thought we were going to wake that person up. And and it never ceases to thrill me that another person is seeing things.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of another person who's seeing things, we had a gentleman on this program after you came on, someone you will know well, Mr. Preston Manning. And Preston has done some writing too along the same lines as you. He's written something called the COVID Commission Report, which is something of a thought experiment in which he imagines a privately funded public inquiry into 16 essential questions surrounding the federal government's mismanagement of COVID-19 and lockdowns. And on the subject of Do Something, of course, Preston Manning has written a book by that title. But what's interesting about this is that Mr. Manning is traveling throughout the country. In fact, he's going to be in Winnipeg tomorrow.
Yes.
For an event what the Frontier Center is putting on. And this seems to be really gathering steam. And when I was thinking about the COVID Commission report and what you've done, it seems to me there must be some way to connect these dots because they really tie in perfectly together. He's calling for a public inquiry, and you've done all the work really to support not only the need for the public inquiry, but you've also gathered a lot of the evidence that would be adduced at such an inquiry. Have you had any discussions, or are you aware of the work that Mr. Manning is doing in this respect?
Preston Manning is going to be in Winnipeg tomorrow, and I was invited to go, and unfortunately, I've got another booking that day. But we do have operatives who are also going, and actually, it was the same folks that handed Pierre Polyev the report when he was in Winnipeg some months ago. They were at a smaller, I think it was like a 24-person lunch with him, and sat next to him, and he promised to take a look at it. But of course, we haven't heard from him, but he's been busy. Mm-hmm. So those same folks are going to present that to Preston Manning tomorrow in Winnipeg.
Is there any way to get the report to Mr. Trudeau, or more importantly, Mr. Butts?
It's been sent to all of them multiple times by registered mail, courier, email. It's been sent to everyone there. I don't believe there's anyone in Ottawa, including the janitor, that hasn't got it. Well, you know, there's been a lot of developments, too, internationally. You know, we wrote our report in April this year, as you know, and we had a whole section on vaccines and pregnant women. And essentially, there had been no testing on pregnant women. They hadn't evaluated effects on fertility. They hadn't evaluated carcinogenity. They had whether it was excreted in breast milk. And yet the medical profession were pushing this on women who were breastfeeding or who were pregnant, who were thinking of being pregnant, even though there'd been no testing. And so we had a section of that in our report. And it just within the last 2 or 3 weeks, I did a Facebook post on it, but I haven't done a post in our blog yet with regard to the government of the United Kingdom issued a new directive. And I swear to you, I'm not making this up. They are now not recommending this for women who are pregnant, breastfeeding, or thinking about becoming pregnant because of the lack of testing. And in my Facebook blog post on this, and I'll do a blog post for your listeners, the wording of the UK report is almost identical to the wording we used in our report. Now, am I suggesting that they stole our wording? No. You can only say hello so many different ways, you know. But it is interesting that the UK has taken that and they've utilized the same reasoning that we utilized in April, and yet the Canadian government is doubling down still on these vaccines. And they're still recommending them for pregnant women or women who are thinking of becoming pregnant. You know, it's to me, it's mind-boggling. I'm old enough to remember the whole thing that happened with thalidomides. And I know we talked about that before, I think in our previous interview. But I don't know what's, I can't imagine what is going on where governments around the world are stopping using this thing and Canada is still pushing it. It's mind-boggling. It's criminal. In my opinion, it's criminal.
Well, it's a great point because even some of the more restrictive governments that sort of marched in lockstep with Canada, for example, Australia and New Zealand, have completely walked this back. In fact, Jacinda Ardern, who is sort of the female alter ego of our prime minister, recently gave an interview and she said that you know, people's medical choices have to be respected. And you're going, what? You know, this is the lady who locked down the entire country. I mean, they haven't had a COVID death in New Zealand since the spring of 2020. And they were among one of the most locked down countries in the entire world. Well, so why is Canada holding on to this so fervently, Ken? Do you have any ideas about it?
I've got a lot of ideas, but they're all, but I mean, look at Sweden and Denmark, same thing. They've stopped it altogether and they've banned it. I believe somebody could correct me on this, but I think they banned it for people under the age of 16 or something and for pregnant women. And yet we continue to go along. I mean, you had, now maybe this is irrelevant, but, Joe Biden 2 days ago in another speech, he said, you know, we got to get vaccinated and we got to wear masks. I have no idea. Maybe they're trying to distract us from, you know, the fact that we're in a situation where we're facing a two-front nuclear war right now because of the foolishness that they're doing around the world. You know, we have famine starting in Africa and grain delivery to Africa out of the conflict zone, it was only been 13% of the shipments went to Africa. The rest went to Europe, and they're making biodiesel out of it. It just came out this morning. So,
wow,
it's not just this COVID thing. This is the battle we have to win today. But there's another battle in this war, and there's another one and another one, and there's no instant solution to this. You know, it the successes are coming. I can reassure your listeners that successes are coming. They're little ones right now, but they're picking up steam. And one of the problems is that the press or media is not reporting them to you, but they are coming. I see this thing turning. We're getting to the top of the hill and it's going to start to roll, and it's really going to roll slowly at first, but then it's really going to come down at the end.
I read a piece recently. I was in an interview with Max Bernier, who was also a guest in this program. And he says that they're trying to counter unconstitutional COVID communism. I guess you would call it unconstitutional COVID fascism, arose by any other name, I suppose. But the idea is the same. It's becoming more and more clear to everyone that the whole purpose of COVID-19, of the lockdowns, of the quote-unquote pandemic, was an assault upon individual freedom and bodily integrity. And had nothing to do with a virus, and as you say, that is something that's becoming more clear. But the job is not done. We've got to keep pressing the point home, don't we?
Absolutely, because it's like we've talked about. This is an octopus, and it's got many tentacles, and you know, we're fighting on one of them now. But the big part about this is when I say there's many tentacles. The first step is getting recognized that this is going on. And then the battle's lost for them. And that is happening. And COVID is the key for us too. It was the key for them. And I actually think there were multiple purposes to this thing. And, you know, one was obviously to make unbelievable amounts of money. One was exactly what you just said, but I believe that the other one was to identify folks who were, what's the word they used in Russia? I can't remember, but no goodniks or dissenters. Now they have a list of all the dissenters.
Yeah, a dissident, right?
A dissident. And that's exactly, if folks I know they're not teaching history in school anymore, but that's China. He locked down on everybody. He collectivized everything. And then he had a little brief reprieve. And he said, let us know what your comments are on all of this. We're stupid enough to go and tell them. And then all of a sudden, that was what they called the, what was it called? The Cultural Revolution. So they took all those teachers and those press reporters and those engineers and those lawyers, and they put them out in the farm and murdered them all. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting we're talking about that here, but it's when you're thinking about history, it's sure a frightening thing to see.
No, it's very true. And we had a guest on the program recently who mentioned that in Nazi Germany, the profession that had the highest degree of membership in the Nazi Party, card-carrying members, was the medical profession, followed closely by the lawyers. So that is shameful, but it shows you know the danger of how if you can corrupt you know the people, the members of society in whom most other people have to place trust. How quickly you can spread a diseased idea like Nazism or COVIDism or whatever you want to call it. This lie of COVID was spread really through experts and people placing their trust in them. And I don't criticize people for doing that, but I do. I think a lot of blame has to be laid at the medical profession and particularly the ones in the profession who really coerced leadership within the medical profession, the ones who coerced the medical profession, members of the medical profession under threat of suspension and banishment from medicine altogether to spread these lies about COVID.
And you know, those lies, particularly with the medical profession, were evident on the face of it. I've talked to lots of doctors privately, and from the beginning, they were kind of, I don't know what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them that have now stepped out of the profession, the ones that could, maybe they're my age or something, and they could, and they just couldn't cotton this anymore. They couldn't support this anymore. You know, they were no longer your family doctor like Dr. Welby. They were more like the state purveyor of pills and propaganda. And I believe most knew this. And if they didn't know it, what in the heck are they doing being a doctor and prescribing things and trying to help people? Because it's not an easy job. Mm-hmm. And somebody said to me once, they said, well, Ken, you shouldn't be so hard on the medical profession because, they were told that they had to do this. But, I was an engineer, and I couldn't imagine as an engineer if I was designing a building and knew it needed a 12-inch deep beam and the government said, well, put in a 3-1, it'll be okay, 3-inch one, it'll be okay. I don't think so. I wouldn't have done that. And yet they went along with the masks that they knew didn't work. That's just basic medicine, basic science.
Yeah.
Giving pregnant women and promoting pregnant women to have a vaccine that's never been used before on humans, never been tested on pregnant women. And as a matter of fact, in my opinion, it was never really tested. If the medical profession would have used the same criteria on all the COVID vaccines that they did on ivermectin, then you wouldn't have used any of the COVID vaccines because if you recall, they said you couldn't use ivermectin because there was no independent peer-reviewed studies of whether it works or not on COVID. Well, there were no independent peer-reviewed studies that I'm aware of on any of the vaccines. The studies were done by the manufacturers and there were a lot of holes in there and they reproved it anyway. So if they would have looked at the numbers, the mortality numbers, the medical profession would have known there was no death pandemic marching through our streets. It just wasn't there and it's supported by their own numbers. So somebody also asked me yesterday, as a matter of fact, well, Ken, what do you want to happen about this? That's not up to me. Mm-hmm. The citizens of this country need to make those people aware, those people in charge aware that we know. And then, as you know, a criminal case, it goes through a certain procedure. You know, the police investigate, the police send their investigation to the Crown. The Crown decides whether or not they're going to do charges, and then there's charges, and then there's a trial. And so nobody's guilty until they're convicted in a trial. And this thing's huge, somebody else said to me. So what we can't do anything. Oh, yes, we can. I don't know what the law is called in Canada, but in the United States, there's laws against organized crime, which is what there's RICO stuff in the States. I don't know what it is in Canada, but this is organized crime. And you've got Tony Soprano at the top, whoever that might be. And you've got the leg breaker at the, or thumb breaker at the bottom, who's collecting the money. And each one of them should be brought to account in the way that's appropriate to the crime that they've committed.
One of the things that's concerning to a lot of people about what you're saying, though, Ken, is that what happens when you go to court? For example, there was a decision only yesterday in Saskatchewan, a judge who upheld COVID tickets that involved gathering outside. And this is despite the fact that the chief medical officer of health for Manitoba in the Gateway case, and I know you're aware of this, under cross-examination admitted that there were a total of zero authoritative scientific studies which supported the theory that there was a risk of spreading COVID-19 outdoors. There's a paucity of scientific evidence, and yet a judge in Saskatchewan is imposing fines totaling several $1,000 for these COVID fines. So
a judge is still operating under the assumption that nobody's watching, or that it's an insignificant number of people watching. Right. And when enough Canadians wake up, there's no way that they'll rule in those kinds of, I don't know if you call it arbitrary, but ridiculous ways. I mean, also, I think it was yesterday, there was a ruling from the a labor tribunal in Ontario. There was a lady, I think it was a lady, who got fired from her job and over the vaccine and was denied EI benefits.
Right.
And so now the tribunal, which isn't a court, has reinstated her EI benefits. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's something this large, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a precedent for this in Canada.
Nope.
Maybe what Preston Manning's talking about is the right thing. Maybe we set up tribunals, because this is huge. You know, if you tried to take every person who did something criminal on this to court, you know, we'll all be dead before half of them get in there. But so maybe they have to set up some kind of tribunals, and maybe we revamp all of those professional organizations. We go in there and clean house, and then have them reasonable investigation. So there might be other ways that people smarter than I can figure out, but on some of these professional organizations, we should clean them out, flush them out, redo them, and then have them start to do investigations. And maybe there's tribunals for higher up members, you know.
What you're saying is that this has got to come from the grassroots level.
Everything here has to. We can't rely on, you know, we can't rely on the police at this point. And again, I want to be very careful. I'm not talking about the guy that I phone when somebody's beating the heck out of me and he comes and jumps in there and saves me. I'm not talking about them. But in a way I am, because I'm standing up. You're standing up. I don't carry a gun. Maybe some of them should start standing up. And I know that some have, and I also know there's criminal investigations against at least one police officer. I don't remember the details. Most of us were raised, you know, watching television and movies, and who was the one you ran to when your house was getting broken into, or somebody was trying to murder you, or they were beating up grandma? Mm-hmm. You went to the police. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Canadian people here are doing, and that's what we're doing. We're going to the police. This is what you folks are there for. This is what you want us to do. You don't want individual citizens to take things into their own hands. You want them to go to the police. So when you have our national police force, which once was the pride of Canada, and I'm not talking about the individual officers, because you folks still are.
Well, Ken, we've kept you for a while here. We're so grateful for you coming back and talking to us again. And we've learned a lot more about what you're doing and the work that your legions of Canadian people, brave Canadians, are doing. This is the part of the program where we turn to the reading list. And I know you've got a lot of books there. Hopefully you thought of a couple or one or two that you're going to share with us.
I forgot.
Okay, you're going to have some time because I'm going to go first. The first is a book that you probably know about. Hopefully you haven't read. This book took me a long time to read because it's a terrible book, first of all. And I had to keep putting it down because I was getting so mad reading it. It's called COVID-19, The Great Reset by Klaus Schwab and Thierry Mallette. And I have to say, I'm probably get in trouble for saying this. It's a really very badly written book. It reminded me a lot of when I read another book that was published in 1923 called Mein Kampf. And the content of the book is, this book is very similar to that one. The COVID-19, The Great Reset is a guide for anyone who wants to understand how COVID-19 disrupted our social and economic systems and what changes will be needed to create a more inclusive, resilient, and sustainable world going forward. Klaus Schwab, the founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, and Thierry Mallette, founder of the Monthly Barometer, explore what the root causes of this crisis were, and they should know, and why they lead to a need for a quote-unquote Great Reset. Theirs is a worrying, yet, according to them, hopeful analysis. COVID-19 has created a great disruptive reset of our global social, economic, and political systems. And I say that was by design. But they say that the power of human beings lies in being foresighted and having the ingenuity, at least to a certain extent, to take their destiny into their hands and to plan for a better future, which, according to them, is you'll own nothing and you'll like it. The other thing about this book is that it essentially calls for the extermination of 7/8 of the world's population. And all of these, the whole playbook for COVID-19, pandemics, proxy wars, environmental catastrophe, is all in this book. And if you want to understand what's going on in the world today and where these people want to take us, even though it's painful to read it, you must read this book. The second book that I refer you to on the other side of it, and sort of point counterpoint, is a wonderful book that I strongly recommend. It's very well written. It's called The Truth About COVID-19, Exposing the Great Reset, Lockdowns, and Vaccine Passports, and the New Normal, which I cross-examined Dr. Hinshaw in Alberta about at length. So this book says that since early 2020, the world has experienced a series of catastrophic events, which, by the way, are all foretold in The Great Reset: a global pandemic caused by a so-called novel coronavirus, international lockdowns and border closings causing widespread business closures, economic collapse, and massive unemployment, and an unprecedented curtailment of civil liberties and freedoms in the name of keeping people safe by locking them up in their homes. We're now living in a world that is increasingly ruled not by our democratic system and institutions, but by public health fiat carried out by politicians who rule by instilling fear and panic. In this book, Dr. Mercola and Cummins reveal new and emerging evidence that the SARS-CoV-2 virus appears to have been lab engineered in a bioweapons lab in Wuhan, China, just as Mr. Trump told us. Global elites have used the pandemic to facilitate the largest upward transfer of wealth in human history. And yes, folks, there's a lot of data to back that up. PCR testing, case counts, morbidity, and vaccine safety and efficacy data, as our guest has pointed out in his report, have all been fabricated. It's all been made up, and really is the product of artificial intelligence models. So this is a wonderful book, and I recommend reading these two together, because the one tells you what the theory is, and then the other book tells the truth about the theory and explodes all the nonsense that is in Klaus Schwab's book. So those are my recommendations for today. And I see that Ken's been looking through his glossary, his anthology of books, and hopefully he's got one or two great suggestions for us. I know he did last time.
You know, the problem is with an engineer is most of what I read is stuff that would be embarrassing to you. We were on the, a couple of years ago before this foolishness started. I remember Rose and I, my wife Rosalie and I, were sitting on the beach in the Caribbean, and she was reading whatever she was reading, and I was reading a 3-inch thick textbook on locksmithing. So, you know, but I think, believe it or not, I think that a really good book, given the ones that you suggested for folks to, I'm going to get some flack on this, is Mein Kampf.
Oh.
When you read what those folks were saying from the World Economic Forum about what their plans are for the world, these are not new ideas. These are not new ideas.
Useless leaders. Useless in Mein Kampf, and it's in the Great Reset. Useless leaders.
So I think that that's a real good companion to that the book that you're talking about. There's another book, and I'm reaching for the title, but I know that you will help me out with this. So, another companion book to what you're talking about, and it was written by Solzhenitsyn.
And
the Gulag Archipelago. And you know, they're talking about now in Canada where they're putting together camps, isolation camps. They're calling them COVID camps, which are still under construction, to my understanding, when they've said the pandemic is over. And perhaps what Solzhenitsyn has to say in his book, and it was his book was a study of his own experiences. I think he spent 25 years in a gulag in Siberia, in Russia. Now, he didn't commit a crime, but he was a dissident, what they considered a dissident. Those are probably two companion books to the two books that you've talked about that will give people more of a historical understanding, because the understanding of history in our country is shameful. It's shameful that folks don't understand. I had a conversation the other day about somebody about the Khmer Rouge, and they didn't know what I was talking about.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, those who don't know history are condemned to relive it, right? Especially the bad parts. Well,
usually the bad parts.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for those recommendations, and also for taking the time to come back and be our first return guest. It was wonderful catching up with you again, and best of luck with your work, your continued work, and everything that you do. Thanks so much for being our special guest once again on Gray Matter.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity, and also the opportunity of some of the ordinary Canadians that are working so hard.
It's our pleasure. Thanks, Ken.